Even before it can come to grips with who it is and what it's going to be, Congress adjourns for the Thanksgiving holiday. Black Friday is going to become more like Blank Friday. Still, some activity of interest to the federal workforce is occurring, and for more, we turn to Roll Call Senior Editor David Hawkins. And I guess maybe I'm a little surprised that in such a momentous year, with so much at stake, that they would even take these 3 days off.
Thanksgiving is one of the few sacrosanct weeks on the congressional calendar. They're even on years where they work have much more time in session than they do than they have been this year. They always take the week for Thanksgiving off.
I guess Thanksgiving is a holiday not tied to any particular sect, race, or religion, and so you can offend everybody that way and therefore offend nobody.
That's right. It's also the case that, the time after the election, members of Congress who've been reelected say is that 2 months between Election Day and the start of the new Congress is one of the few times they ever really get some downtime. It's also the only time in the sort of the 24-month political cycle where they're not expected to raise money. So this is a rare week of for them to give thanks that they don't have to raise money.
Yeah, and so speaking of money for the federal government, the continuing resolution, some bill is going to come up at some point. What is the outlook for that?
Well, this is one of the more remarkable things that the President-elect Trump's team did last week that I think didn't get too much coverage, which was they told the Republican leadership, stop working on an omnibus bill. Stop what you're doing. Put your pencils down, even though you might have reportedly 6 or even 7 of the 12 pieces of the bill put together. And please pass a CR until March 31st so that I, Donald Trump, new president, can have a say in shaping the budget for the fiscal year that will by that point be half over.
So he does want to do a 2017 half-year budget, but not until, obviously, they've had a chance to really get into it.
That's right, but obviously this only adds to their workload because they will be trying to negotiate by postponing the fiscal 17 discussions until the wintertime, and then presumably making it a relatively large early legislative fight in which the conservative Republicans and the Trump administration will try and add on all kinds of conservative policy riders, which the Democrats will resist, and I think it's not too early to start actually thinking about the possibility that the government could shut down on April 1st next year. Even as all that is happening, the new OMB and the new Trump's budgetary team will be trying to get ready for fiscal 18. But you really can't do that until fiscal 17 is finished. So he has complicated the workload significantly.
Yes, because the president's proposal for 2018, the so-called dead on arrival every year that comes out, that's shortly after March 31st anyway that it's due, correct?
It is actually due on the first Monday in February. So usually when that's in law, it's never enforced. It is often skipped, especially when a new president comes in. Usually the new president does not propose his own new budget until, yes, you're right, about March of the new year. Sometimes the outgoing president actually sort of drops a budget on Congress on his way out the door as a somewhat of a symbolic point. We don't know whether President Obama is going to do that yet. Jimmy Carter famously did it. I think Gerald Ford did it, both after each of them had lost. So we don't know how that will all play out. But either way, the bottom line is the budget and the spending levels for programs and agencies is going to be very, very uncertain probably between now and next fall.
Because a lot of the agency work on 2018 has already been done. They've had their passbacks, and now it's cogitating at, I guess, OMB before the prepared version is released normally, February
1st. That's right. And, for many of these programs and agencies, they are not weapons in the budget fight to come, we don't think. We don't actually know what President-elect Trump wants to, how far down in the weeds he wants to go on spending wars. He hasn't even really sent a signal that he is going to endorse the conservative Republicans' effort to roll back discretionary spending. We know that he wants to spend a lot more on public works and infrastructure. We don't. He hasn't really sent a signal as a candidate that he was all that interested in the deficit, really at all. And meanwhile, while all this is happening, the two-year so-called Ryan Murray budget deal that held, that kind of lifted, eased the spending caps for a couple of years, that's over after the 17 budget is settled, and so we look to 18 with, I believe it's a $4 billion rollback, $4 billion lower cap on domestic and a $2 billion lower cap on defense. Some Republicans wouldn't want to hold those caps in place. Some will want to lift only the defense cap. We know President-elect Trump would like to lift the defense cap. We're pretty confident of that. So, again, a world of uncertainty.
We're speaking with David Hawkins, senior editor at Roll Call. And while we're on it, Trump has pointed, potentially anyhow, to several Republican members of the House and the Senate as possible members of his cabinet. And if he takes several more Republican senators out and they join the administration, could that potentially affect the balance in the Senate?
Really, probably not, because we know the one, as you and I are talking, the one senator that we know is going to the cabinet or wants to go to the cabinet is Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama for attorney general. Alabama has a very Republican governor. The way it works, Senate seats and House seats are filled in a fundamentally different way. In essentially every case, a Senate vacancy is filled by that state's governor, at least temporarily. And so my guess is that if President-elect Trump is going to be going to the Senate for members of his cabinet, he will make sure to go to only senators who would be replaced by fellow Republican governors, because otherwise, as you say, it would be it would potentially alter the balance, which is now only 52-48, which is a win is a win, but it's it doesn't leave him too much running room.
And Mitch McConnell, of course, has been renamed as the majority leader in the Senate. Over on the House side, though, on the minority side, how real is that challenge to Nancy Pelosi? You hear differing versions of it. And what is the possibility that we would have Ryan as Speaker and another Ryan as the minority leader?
Yes, that's right. So Nancy Pelosi is facing a challenge from a guy named Tim Ryan. He he's only 43. He's been a congressman from the northeastern corner of Ohio, the Youngstown area, for about a dozen years, I think, maybe more. Since he was 29, I think he got elected. He represents exactly the kind of part of the country that is the Democrats' biggest problem and the Trump Republican Party's biggest boon, which is to say, these are the white working class voters who live in an economically distressed part of the country, the old industrial heartland of manufacturing. These were many of the counties in this guy's district voted twice for Barack Obama and turned to vote for Donald Trump in November. So he says he is the personification of the party's, of the kind of Democrat who can address the party's problem, all of which makes sense in the abstract. But Nancy Pelosi, who has been in charge of the House Democrats now for 14 years, has an enormous reservoir of respect, some goodwill, and to circle back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, the ability to raise millions and millions and millions of dollars for these folks. She claims that she's got re-election handily in the bag. It is tough to run an election like this on only 2 weeks' notice, especially when, also as we discussed a minute ago, members of Congress are not in town this week, so trying to make your case in person, a vote at a time, is pretty difficult to do. The last time Pelosi was challenged was after the Democrats lost control of the House and she was kicked out as Speaker in 2010. A conservative Democrat ran against her and got, I think, about 53 votes, so out of a couple of hundred. So it's a tall order.